Some interesting words in our texts. Pretty much every text that we are likely to encounter has got something interesting to say in it. But this one, there's the two New Testament lessons that I find most compelling and combined with each other, I think, are the two that, well, are definitely the two that I'm going to be looking at this morning. And what I was thinking about was contentment on the one hand, but on the other hand, I started to think what gets in the way, and that's where the sermon title comes from, How Do We View Stuff? And stuff is, as my theology professor once said, is a theological and importantly theological word, and it just means everything. It means everything that we own. Maybe a better sermon title would be How Do We View Our Stuff? But it's other people's stuff as well. And how we view the things of life, the things that we have and the things that other people have, has a direct impact on everything, as far as I can tell, everything about us. If we are someone who looks at other people's belongings, other people's achievements, and everything that we see someone else have diminishes us somehow, we are living in what game theorists call a zero-sum world. And a zero-sum world means is the kind of way of thinking that everything's a pie. And so if you have a piece of a pie, then there's less pie. And it works extremely well for pie. It doesn't work very well for virtually anything else, particularly when it comes to the things of life. The fact that someone has more things than I do doesn't diminish me in any meaningful way unless I let it. And so my view of stuff, the physical things of life, as well as those less physical things like reputation and things, how I view those things is going to really, really fix in my mind on some very important things. And I've heard it said that there's sort of two ways to look at the world, and you know that I'm not terribly fond of dichotomies, and they're not very often true, but they're often helpful models for us to think of. And the two ways to look at the world are one from scarcity and one from plenty. And if we look at the world from a scarcity perspective, we will always be looking to make sure that what we have never goes away, because we need it. It's a lot like people who prepare for the apocalypse, who always have an underground bunker filled with things. And if anything goes out of that, they are less well prepared. And so they approach the world from this scarcity idea that the time will come, if it hasn't already, when there simply won't be enough for everyone. So they need to make sure that they have enough for themselves and their family. This doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're selfish or anything else. But it means they look at the world as a very limited thing. People with a prosperity or a non-scarce view of the world are fairly sure that there's enough to go around and more besides. And so if they have enough and then a little bit more, giving some of the little bit more away doesn't worry them the same way. It doesn't make them think that, well, that's gone, I will never get it back, because there's only so much. And it comes back to that whole idea of the number of pieces of pie. Well, if we were only talking about pie, if we were only talking about stuff, well, then we probably wouldn't be talking about it here, because that's usually not the kind of thing we talk about in church, is just pies and stuff. The thing that this way of thinking does, or what these ways of thinking do, is they directly influence how we think of God. And so if we think of God from this scarcity mindset, we will always be looking at what we have and holding on to it, because there might not be enough. But if we look at God from the plenty perspective, knowing that God's grace is infinite, that God's goodness is infinite, it's a lot easier for us to release a lot of things, not just the stuff of life, but also to be less concerned about things like reputation and less concerned about achievements. Not that we don't have our own, but we don't spend a lot of time judging them against somebody else's, because our achievement is our achievement. And what it allows us to do is to celebrate what other people do, because people in a scarcity mindset find it very hard to celebrate somebody else's achievement because it means that they don't have it and that they can never get it because there is that achievement has been used up. It's impossible for anybody else to get the same thing, which isn't really true. The same thing, the same identical thing, I suppose that's the case. I mean, if somebody gets a job, you can't have their exact same job at the same time because, well, it doesn't work that way. But you might get the exact kind of job to work alongside them, not working as them, but with them. That happens often. If nothing else, if you have a job that has more work than you can do, you probably want somebody to come along and do some of the work as well. And if you can be open and generous, if you can be hospitable to other people being succeeding, I think you'll find that you're a much happier person, because that's the other thing that comes out of a scarcity mindset. The other thing that comes out of it is, well, we see it in the parable. The only parable that Jesus applies a name to, the parable of Lazarus and the rich guy. Not the Lazarus who was raised from the dead. I mean, a parable's a story. This is unlikely to have literally happened as it was. In the same way that Jesus employed hyperbole, Jesus told parables, which are stories, to make a point. And what we see here is we see this rich man who seems to be living somehow on some kind of a strange scarcity mindset or something, because it isn't made explicitly clear, but it's very obvious that this rich man doesn't do anything for Lazarus, because it says that Lazarus wishes that he could, longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. But if he was longing to, he obviously didn't. So the rich man didn't even take the stuff that fell on the floor and give it to somebody else. So I think we can safely say that this rich man was not generous. And not only was he not generous, he wasn't kind, he wasn't a lot of other things. And so then we have this, this is the only place we get a picture like this in Scripture, where we've got both sides of the afterlife talking to each other, which is another reason why it probably isn't literal. But we have both of these people dying, and Lazarus receives comfort, the rich man doesn't. And I think the lesson here is not the one that I took, which was that if I go to the bad place, I'll see other people having a good time. I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about. What Jesus is saying is that we have enough witness to what the right thing to do is on earth that we don't need another person to come back from the dead. And I say another because Jesus already did that. And this is, of course, before Jesus did that. So Jesus is saying, look, the Scripture that you have is enough for you to make the good decisions of life that Lazarus somehow made. We don't know a lot about Lazarus, but if we look at sort of the behavior that he might have engaged in as an opposite of what the rich man did, it seems like maybe he was generous to other people, to other beggars such as himself. Well, if a beggar can be generous, can't anyone? One of the things that is an ongoing mystery to me and to anthropologists too, because they don't have a really good explanation for it, is why the lower you go on the economic scale, all things being equal, the more generous people are with each other. And the reverse is true. The higher up you go, the less generous people are with each other, particularly when you start looking at it as sort of a percentage of what people have. We think of the story of the widow who gave all that she had. Well, all she had was 2 pennies, which, obviously not very much, according to which translation you use, it's 2 pieces of money, obviously not very much. But what we see often is people in sort of middle and lower classes, just to lay it out there, we're not talking about just the poorest of the poor, it goes up into people very much like us, who are generous, who give, and often give sacrificially. And it seems the further up the money tree you go, the less money comes out. And it gets piled up like leaves somewhere. It reminds me of another parable that Jesus told about somebody who made barns that weren't going to do him any good in the end. People who view stuff as something that is there to be used for good, or to be used, period, are the kind of people who give to others when others need it. And if our view of our stuff is that these the things we have are very much gifts from God. We worked for them, to be sure, but it was God who gave us the willingness and the ability to work for them. I don't dismiss, and nobody dismisses, the value of working hard and all that that means. But working hard for something doesn't mean that it's only ours forever. Working hard for something means that we have something that perhaps we can give to someone else. But we can't do that if we look at the things of life as being a very finite resource. Because the things we have is more than just our stuff. It's who we are. It's what we can do. It's our gifts. It's our abilities. It's our experience. It's our interests, our delights, all of those things. And if we can view the things that we enjoy in life and the things that we have in life, even if we don't enjoy them all that much, like, say, the furnace downstairs, it's making noise. Maybe we don't enjoy that at the moment, but we have a furnace, so that's a good thing. If we look at all of those things as gifts from a God who loves us and who loves everyone, if we look at the things that we own and the things that we've earned and the things that we've received as gifts and all of those things as ultimately gifts from God, it makes it easier for us to share them, to hold on to them a little less tightly. We still value them, we still enjoy them, but we're open to other people needing them. And if other people need them, we're open to giving them what it is that we have, or giving from what we have. A theology of stuff hasn't yet to be written. I'm not sure I'm the person to write it. But a way of living that says that the things of our life are gifts from God to be used for God will change how we view our stuff, make us more generous people, easier to be around, and happier too.